time, he created a hell of a lot of problems, divided the community, created at least temporarily maybe a blighted area, but he established a major thoroughfare. Would we be better off if that major thoroughfare wasn't there? If we now look at the big picture over a long period of time, have we come out ahead? Without that thoroughfare, where would we be to handle traffic in that area? Over to you, Glenn.
I think there are probably better ways of doing it. I don't know all the answers to that, but I know that that was his, that was probably the last time. You have to realize that Robert Moses had so many successes with the parkways and just about everything, that everything he did was golden. And I think that it really took him by surprise after that, all of the problems he ran into going through the Bronx. And, where everything that he, much of the power that he had was because everything he touched was perfect, that, he kind of had a free reign over just about anything that would happen, you know, any one of his projects. But after that, everything went into committee and review and went to the city as normal, as usual. Thank you. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Now, Glenn, you and I have lived through a somewhat similar episode. Long Island, you and I can project forward, is always going to be a little bit shy on electrical power generation capability. The second most expensive electrical power in the whole United States is on Long Island. The highest electrical price is in a small community in Hawaii. So the Shoreham Nuclear Station, as far as electrical power generating is concerned, was looking forward, solving a problem that's inevitable. And for a whole bunch of reasons, Shoreham didn't go through, and it's got a huge evacuation problem. There is available to us, at very inexpensive rates, a tremendous amount of hydroelectric power from Canada. That's the good news. The bad news, the conduits to bring that power from Canada down to Long Island, essentially doesn't exist, would have to be established. In order to establish that, let me drop. A whole lot of eminent domain problems are going to have to take place. There's a lot of farmers' lands and communities and whatever who say, you're not going to put that high tension line across my community. And as such, that power is sitting there, we're not getting it, and we haven't been able to solve that problem. That's my understanding of it. I wonder if you've got a different take on that one, Glenn. As it is now, we have established a new electric cable that went across the Long Island Sound and another new electric cable that went over to New Jersey, which are partial solutions, but these submarine cables can't carry anywhere near the amount of power you can with a overhead extremely high tension line, particularly a DC line. Massive portions of Canada have as their transmission system half megavolt DC, plus or minus half megavolt. You could almost call it megavolt DC when you add the plus to the minus. And that kind of a system bringing power to Long Island could really divide our electric power rates by a nice number. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
I think that there's a lot of possibilities available here, Dick. I know that there's quicker solutions than other ones. The natural gas-fired facilities are probably the most reasonable ones. The long transmission lines, and then buying energy from other communities. I don't know. And they, there are possibilities. Maybe they'll be part of the solution. I don't know. But I think overall, the natural gas-fired facilities, they're actually smaller, cleaner. They're able to distribute much more power overall. And the other thing, too, is they're working tremendously between the city, through New Jersey, bringing in more and more natural gas. And I think as those pipelines continue, a lot of those problems will be alleviated in the future. But here again, I think the more reasonable solution is probably going to be more natural gas there. But there again, that's just my opinion. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
That may be a reasonably good short-term solution, but still, hydrocarbon fuels do increase carbon loading, do increase global warming. You don't have any carbon loading, global warming when you use hydropower. And when you use megavolt DC, you start getting very high efficiencies of transport of that power. So Canada has a lot of water. We need a lot of electricity. There's a way that the two can come together. And a megavolt DC line would be a very nice long-term solution. But establishing that line, as time goes on, it's more and more difficult to establish it as more and more communities start using that land. And so more and more eminent domain problems are coming about. So I guess you and I are assuming now that that high-tension line from Canada to Long Island probably will not take place, and that's sad. And so we're going to be using local generating by way of, I guess you're saying, natural gas. Does that mean we're going to be establishing more gas-fired electric power stations on Long Island? And each community is going to say, not in my backyard. It's not going to be an easy choice. Over to you, Glenn.
I think just basically many of the older oil-fired plants are basically being replaced by the natural gas, and the capability of generation is tenfold of what the older plants used to do. So as each one gets retrofitted and the more pipelines are being fed in, generally it's not necessarily a matter of more plants, it's more efficient plants and better distribution lines. But that's a project that's completely ongoing all the time. But I think likely that we're going to see the most expensive properties in Connecticut and New York have the power lines run over them, bridges and things there. Like I would say that's probably doubtful, at least in my lifetime anyway. There.
The last I knew, Glenn, you had designed a very nice half bridge for Wesley's project, not a H bridge, I think it's called a half bridge, which is capable of making plus or minus 500 volt square waves at anything from a few kilohertz to approaching 100 kilohertz. Before we go over to that, was there a person who had a question that just signed in? Who was that? K2RIW?
Oh, this is N2LDY. I just have an antenna question, sometime before you pull the plug or whatnot.
No, I'm also waiting for my time.
Okay. I don't know how we're going to settle this one.
I will first.
Go ahead, Wes.
I'm sorry. Time is passing by, and just want to ask you the question that did you have a chance to see those two video links that I have sent you, and then we give the time to the gentleman to ask the antenna question.
Yes, I think I did. I believe the most recent link was on the spark gaps that are used on radar systems, which they usually call a TR circuit or an anti-TR circuit.
Yeah, but before one with the two light bulbs that I was lighting up.
Okay, I'm not sure I saw that one. Give us a description of that one, John. I mean, here we go, Wes.
When you go to the sent emails, there was one that was sent in January 19. Could you look at that?
I'm looking at it right now, and you might want to start describing what I'm about to see.
What you're going to see in here is a recorded conversation between me and John at the beginning of it. It shows a new development, never published material of TK, from one was presentation to the president-elect and the parliament, and the other one was a presentation for the Turkey to Wessel. This is completely new material. Now, this material you have, part of this material you have seen The one with this antenna, we discussed it. Also the other one in the private house, we've seen that. And then approximately when we go to the minute 8:19, actually before that time, you're gonna see the structure that have built and 200 watts light bulb in full brightness and 2xG.
Yes, I'm looking at that particular YouTube right now. First light of hope in 212 investigation, and it starts off showing two light bulbs. It also shows a video inside of a video. That's the one that you're talking about.
It's correct. And if you go to 8, go to 7:42.
I'm at 7:15 right now. I'm looking at a handsome gentleman in front of a laboratory equipment. I'm slowly crawling up to 7:42. And I bet that's you in the picture.
That is correct. Let me just shut off the voice on it. Now, this video is progressing, and then you see the two spark guts exactly the way that we discussed over the TechNet, and then one is barely leading, the other one is very much visible with a bluish light on it. You see two light bulbs in here, and you see at a particular moment when I say 200 watts full brightness, a rapid increase of the brightness. That's exactly at 12:43. So you go to 12:42 or 12:41, and you're gonna see that.
Now, I am seeing two bright white light bulbs and the dim purplish one on the table.
Spark up, one of the spark ups. You have two of them, one on the left-hand side, one on the right-hand side.
Okay. The two bright white light bulbs, are they connected to different circuits?
They are connected to the same circuit in series.
And each one of those is a 100-watt bulb, I think you're saying?
Correct. Now, exactly at 12:43. So if you go to 12:41 and start from here, and then you see a rapid change in brightness to the full brightness. And then I say the words 200 watts.
Now, the recording ends at 12:44. You want me to go that far to the end?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was reading wrong. I'm sorry, 8 minutes 43 seconds, 8:43. You go to 8:43. Sorry about it. 8:43. So start from 8:41.
I'm at 8:41 right now, going to 8:43.
And notice that rapid change in brightness, and then I say full brightness.
And you're wearing protective green gloves?
Correct. This is the letter one that I'm holding the light bulb on the right-hand side, right hand. On the left hand, I have a rubber one. In one point, I was trying to change the hand, and then I say, whoa, because I couldn't hold it. Now, when you advance further, you see that I deem that, and you see exactly the filament is being heated. So it is a proof that we're not dealing with the gas that is glowing, but we're dealing with the resistive component that is built into the light bulb.
What is the method by which you detect whether or not the thermionic emission of the light bulb is dominating and that there's no other gas lighting in the light bulb? What was the method by which you differentiate on that, Wes? Go ahead.
Very simple. I went to the lowest. That would be I'm going to go to that part, to the lowest, so you could see the filament, and then you will see how the filament is that would be, hold on.
The answer is he didn't.
Oh, the answer is I did. When you see the light bulb and you see the filament in the light bulb, go to 518. Somehow my internet is slowed down when I need it. Hold on. No, that's not 518. Hold on.
Yeah, 518 is a picture in a picture.
Yeah, 721, let me see. Okay, got it. Start from 727.
I'm watching you bring up the brilliance, I believe, starting at 727.
It's correct, and you see exactly, and I repeat it a few times that during that part, that filament is getting brighter and brighter, and in one point, that would be when I was trying to change the hand, and you felt that I couldn't hold it. Hold that. So hot.
When you were doing that tuning, were you changing amplitude or frequency or waveform? Or what were you changing?
Frequency.
So you're just slowly changing the frequency of that signal generator?
Correct.
And when I see the number 137 on the signal generator, that's... The 137 represents what, Wes?
Voltage.
And the right-hand number is the frequency?
No, the left-hand side number is 13.7 of kilovolts. The TNC power supply generator that is heavily modified, I couldn't get anything out of it. And even right now, when I plug these two light bulbs directly to the output, there was one moment when I was barely able to see anything on these two light bulbs. But interesting factor, today I was trying and I see only spark. The light bulb is completely not responding to that. So. Whether the weather or condition or whatever is happening, the power delivered by the device is not able to even bring it to any light at all. And when I connect it to the machine, I have a full brightness.
The machine to your left that your green glove often touches has a liquid crystal display, has a light emitting diode. It's got a digital display on the left-hand side, and the digital display on the right-hand side.
Right. On the left-hand side, I have a voltage. On the right-hand side, I have a power reflected. So that would be... basically, what I estimated is that I'm... I mean, it's hard for me to say right now how much power did I deliver, but I assume that would be hard to say, 10 watts. Is the real power when I minus whatever is reflected. The 30 watts is the maximum that is recommended in the manual that should be set. Now you have 27 watts reflected, so it should be 3 watts. The maximum I estimate is 10 watts and 2 actually.
Is there a way of knowing something about the waveform that is going to the light bulb?
It's a sine wave. I've seen it on the oscilloscope. It's a similar structure had when I was driving the device from the square wave generator through the flyback, and the flyback was giving me even amplitude of the high voltage on the secondary winding because it was in self-resonance. And instead of getting hard, it was cold. Then I was dealing with the sine wave signal that was at point 11 delivered to the Avramenko fork. Now, we're dealing with exactly the same situation. We're dealing, we don't have a power flyback to point 11, we're delivering the frequency of, I cannot see that, 135 kilohertz. And then, it's a sine wave. Now, that sine wave is delivered also to the Avramenko fork. And then we have the whole structure, and we have the two light bulbs, and we have the two spark guns.
That blue spark gap looks like the kind of a TR circuit that's used in a radar. Is that true?
It's correct. And in that material that is approved for publishing, which is the material that I sent you today, this material shows many different kinds of spark gap tubes, and in between them it shows exactly the one that I'm talking about. It does have a white powder inside, and plenty of that.
At around 12:20, I see the bulbs going completely on and completely off. You were turning on and off the signal generator, not changing the frequency?
What minute?
Near the very end.
Well, basically at 11:26 you see the spectrum analyzer, and you see the spectrum analyzer, and I was trying to tune into it.
Okay.
Hold on. Go to 11:33. Go to, even before that. Go to 10:56. 10:56, and you see,
okay.
I try to lock into it. And you see rapidly growing amplitude. You can even start before that, it will be more informative. Okay, start from 10:10. It needs lockup. My wife is, I'm talking to my wife in the meantime, but I'm right now in 10:36.
Okay, sir, I'm very close to that point.
We were close, 10:57. Okay, yeah, that's the point. 10:55 to 6. At 10:56, you see that I'm changing the frequency and trying to log into it, and I'm decreasing the frequency. Then all of a sudden you see the amplitude of the signal going up, and then I'm repeating the same with the camera on the spark up.
Yeah, I'm seeing a sudden jump on the spark.
Go ahead. Forger. Don't stop, because at point 11:16 you're going to see also when I'm touching the wire, the spark between the wire and the capacitor, which says about the presence of the quite significant voltage and the current. What I can also do is, in the next material that I'm going to send you, I can connect these two light bulbs in series to the output of the device by itself without my device, that means to the generator, and show you that there is no response from the light bulbs.
At the end, you said beautiful, 100 watts. Thank you.
200 watts.
And that's what I meant to say. And you're saying that because of the essentially full brilliance of the bulbs, it would be helpful, although the difference may be small, if there was another bulb of the same kind, side by side, being powered by 120 volt AC from Con Ed, and that way you'd see the identical brilliance of the bulb that you're firing and the bulb that Con Ed is firing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That would be a good one. But the brilliance of the light bulbs were higher than the brilliance of the light bulbs, that two light bulbs of 110 volts, each one connected in series to 110 volts. So definitely that was brighter. Now the proof, the point that the filament was lighting, not a gaseous substance in it, is also proven, and I'm trying to find the moment in which I'm trying to change the hand, and while I'm doing that, I simply cannot hold it, and I say, wow, 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 I said, hold on, and then say, it's hot. And also, when you see a few times that I dim the light bulb by changing the frequency, you see the filament very much perfectly.
The advantage of having a bulb fired by your machine, or two bulbs, and at least one more bulb of the identical kind fired by, lit up by way of Con Ed power, is twofold. Number one, we'll see nearly identical brilliance, or maybe even yours will be brighter. Second of all, the camera being a color camera will have a little bit of sensitivity as far as filament power versus gas power. I'm guessing gas power, gas lighting power, would have a slightly different spectrum to it.
Yeah, if you can go to the minute 9:25 and start from here, only 5 seconds, 7 seconds, just that would be helpful. 9:25.
This is N2LDY. You could also, actually, with the comparison light bulb, you could actually take a light meeting reader, and you could read the lumens on his light bulbs as opposed to the lumens on the Viper light bulb.
Yeah, that's a rather good point.
Did you see 9:25? Next 5-7 seconds.
I'm in the process of going there right now.
Yeah, 9:25, and you see that I'm trying to change the hand. The hand, on the right-hand side, I have a leather base glove. That allows me to hold it, although it was hot, so I was trying to change it to the other hand, and then I couldn't hold it.
Yeah, I did see that one, Wes. And, Don, that's a good suggestion.
Actually, I got another question. I'm listening in here, and I do have another question. Let me make sure I'm making it.
Yeah, you're making it.
Oh, you're saying the wire was hot. Was the wire physically hot, or is it a possibility that the wire could have been leaking through your dielectric, some type of RF or voltage, and it was. Actually, the heat from the spark, which the tiny sparks that might have been generated into your fingers, might have been causing the heatness. Causing the heat, you know, or causing the wire to feel hot.
It wasn't the wire that was hot at this particular moment. It was the light bulb that was hot. Now, as far as we're talking about wire being hot, I had the wire. That was going, one of the wires that was going out of the Abraminko fork when I was doing before the experimentation. Now the wire was approximately length of 20-25 inches maximum. And what I have noticed, the wire was never connected anywhere, but the upper 5 inches was getting harder and harder and harder to the point that I couldn't hold it. But that was before I connected light bulbs, and I thought, okay, if I cut it to the point of the what is hard, I'm gonna find the wavelength, the hot spot where the energy is coming. I cut it, but still, another 3 inches was hot in it. And to a GM.
Can I get in there?
Yeah, go ahead, Don.
Yeah. Do you have like a non-contact thermometer, you know, an infrared thermometer, or you know, non-contact thermometer that you could actually read the temperature along the wire and actually see if that's it, you know, like without physically touching it?
No, I don't have this one. But the example with the wire was just for different questioning. As far as the light bulb by itself, I had a gloves, I had a good insulation. I couldn't hold the light bulbs because they were so hot that I even had a problem to hold it with the glove that was made with the heavy leather material. So definitely we're not dealing with the gas being ionized and glowing. We're dealing with the resistive reactive action of the light bulb.
Okay, she tubes like you.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Leslie, do you have thermocouples where you could actually put say like two or three thermocouples on each one of the light bulbs as a sample? Get some temperature measurements on them, and you can do the same thing with a 120 volt 60 cycle light bulb, and compare the two side by side. But I think if you measure the temperatures with a temperature logger, or you know, it's like say three thermocouples on each light bulb, same spots, that'll probably give you a very very good estimate to how much power dissipation is in each bulb. So see, you know, if they're tracking.
Beautiful suggestion. I don't have them. I have to buy them. And yes, it's a good point. We could do it with measuring the density of the light, intensity of the light. That would be done very easily through, let's say, a screen that has one hole in it, and both of the devices that will measure the intensity of the light would be pointing at the same point of the light bulb, one that is connected to the grid and the other one that is connected to the device. That's one of the way. The other way is thermocouple. Thank you very much for that suggestion, Glenn.
Just one other thing, Wesley.
Suggestion?
Light meters are very, very flaky devices. They have to be done at specific lengths, and it can give you very, very erroneous data. I mean, it's good for a reference just to get a basic idea of how much light output is coming out of something, but it's not going to really tell you, give you a very good indication of you know, real power in the light bulb. But temperature is a very, very good indicator of power. Let me pass it back to Dick. Hey, Tori, that piece too, like this.
Yeah, I'm going to be asking a question about the spectrum analyzer in a minute, but go ahead, Don. I thought Don said he had a suggestion.
Yeah, what about a small little square of copper, or just the copper, all the same? And use a non-contact infrared thermometer, what temperature the plate is at. You can't read the filament because the filament is like way too high for any of those non-contact thermometers to measure, but it would measure the little copper pad on each one. then you can also use that device instead to measure the temperature of the wire. So it's a really good thing to have.
The wires weren't hot. The only wire that I experienced to be hot, there was no other wire that was hot. The only one wire that was hot, and that was before I connected the light bulb, was the wire that was going out of the Abramenko fork. And that wire was only from one side of the Abramenko fork. Now that wire was, as I say, 25 inches long. Let me take a look at it. 25 inches long, and the last 5 inches were getting harder and harder and harder, to the point that I couldn't hold it in my hand. So I cut it a few inches, and I still didn't get all of the points of the sending wave concentration. Back to you.
Don, I should know, but I didn't measure. Are you coming in the eastern input or the western input? You live in Center Reach. Your signal did get a little bit noisy on that transmission, Don. At around 11 o'clock, you've got a picture of a spectrum analyzer, and you see the harmonics coming up and going down as the light bulb lights.
What minute is that?
At 11 minutes. The spectrum analyzer that I'm seeing at 11 minutes, what is the width on that screen? Is it 0 to 50 KC, for instance? What is the lowest and highest frequency on that spectrum analyzer screen?
With 1 megahertz at the top. 0 to 1 megahertz.
Okay. Therefore, each line there is 100 KC, and I'm seeing a 200 KC line and I think I'm seeing a 400 KC line.
The frequency of resonance at my point was not the real frequency of the resonance. It was one of the harmonics. This thing could go only to 100 kilohertz down. It could not go lower. And I was operating at a frequency of approximately 100 to 120 kilohertz. When you see that I'm lowering the frequency to lock up, means that there was a rapid response I wasn't lowering the frequency. I was increasing the frequency. And I went a little bit up, and then all of a sudden you see the peak is going up. Now, at that point, it was a lock up, and I was trying to lower the frequency in which the brightness of the cube of the light bulbs was increasing to the point when rapidly there was a sharp cut. But I didn't want it to go to that point. And my light bulb didn't light any longer.
So at around 11 minutes and 10 seconds, the screen is showing a total of 3 responses.
That is correct. Remember in one point when I told you, look at my hand, somewhere around that, I told you before, look at the spark that also I created by myself by touching the wire to the capacitor. So that's what you see on the screen. There are 3 peaks that shows up. Those peaks are because of me not holding the wire properly to the capacitor.
The spectrum analyzer was connected where? Across the light bulb west?
Spectrum analyzer was not connected anywhere. The wire that is a PNC connector, the wire of the length of approximately 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 inches is ended with the PNC connector from the other side, and then I have a something like a fork connector, which one side is the PNC that is plugged in it, and from the other side you have two parallel connectors that you can connect to the typical instrument or power supply or whatever. This kind of connector was allowing me to just have that part exposed and react to the signal incoming. I didn't want it to damage this stuff.
If I understand correctly, then the BNC connector and the probe from the spectrum analyzer was acting like an antenna.
That is correct.
So it was nearby and not connected to anything.
Right.
And I'm seeing three responses on that screen, one at about 240, one at about 490, and one at about 740 kilohertz.
What I say, the three responses on it is because of me improperly touching the wire to the, for the moment, to the capacitor. I just moved my hand, but normally I didn't have any harmonics. I had a perfect sine signal, and I had a one within the range from 0 to 100 megahertz. I had only one peak. In one point, you see that it's another peak that is showing up on the whole video. I just don't remember what was that.
At the time you were getting the one peak, was that at around 160 kilohertz?
Okay, what minute is that?
I'm now seeing a very strong signal at 11 minutes and 44 seconds at around 100 kilohertz.
Yes, I see 43.
Okay,
yes, that was 43. That was one strong response. That was the main response, and two very small ones. If I go to 11:42, I see one strong response, which is the main one, and then I see two, actually more, of very small ones. I didn't even notice them. But those are the harmonics, so let's say 100 kilohertz. Well, I'm trying to find out which harmonic is that, but I didn't have a spectrum wide enough to see the whole spectral components. I was just having a spectrum that was giving me a comfortable reading. Everything was unexpected. I mean, the kind of euphoria that I have had was just because I didn't expect that.
I think setting the spectrum analyzer from 0 to 1 megacycle is a very convenient way. I think it's going to encompass the majority of all the energy, and now each box is 100 kilohertz, so it is a very quick way of seeing what's going on.
Yeah, but I am pretty much sure that the big peak that I'm seeing is the harmonic or the frequency that goes below. I remember from the first video that we have made on exactly the same device, I was in here. Aidas was in Lithuania. Arunas was in England. He was maneuvering the generator through the computer that was in Lithuania. And we went at that point to up to 1 kilowatt of power. Actually, I didn't see 1 kilowatt of power. I've seen 600 watts. So we start from 60 watts, then we went to 150 watts, and then we changed to halogen of 600 watts. Now, later on, I was told that he's connected 1 kilowatt. I didn't see the 1 kilowatt at that point. Now, we operated at the frequency 16.8 kilohertz. That was the frequency that was delivered to the Abramenkov work. No, that was the frequency that was delivered to the primer of the flyback transformer. So that's what I see in here. It's not the main. It's just I don't have the ability. The monster, which is the fluke, doesn't want to help me with lower frequencies. And that's why I'm wonder if Glenn wasn't so busy and finished the transformer, because I have all of the parts that I could build, the parts that will allow me to investigate what's going on from 10 kilohertz to 100 kilohertz. Glenn?
Wesley, throughout most rest of this particular movie that we've been watching now that goes on for 12 minutes and 44 seconds, what do you believe was the primary fundamental frequency you were feeding into the network?
Well, the primary fundamental frequency was 100 to 120 kilohertz. But that was my frequency, fundamental sinusoidal frequency with no harmonics. But I should have used the frequency that is in vicinity between 16 to 25 kilohertz. Now, could we calculate if that could be a harmonic of mentioned bandwidth?
I'm a little curious now if you're getting a very nice response somewhere between 100 and 120 kilohertz. What makes you want to use 16 kilohertz instead? I'm not quite sure what that means. Go ahead.
Because I don't believe that I could have light up 600 watts. And we did that with 16.8 kilohertz. We know for sure that we delivered 16.8 kilohertz to the primer of the flyback. From the secondary of the flyback, we have had a sinusoidal, clean, even amplitude, ferro resonant frequency, which the transformer should simply burn up. It was that cold. It wasn't even hot. Now, the reason for that was a properly adjusted a square signal that was going to the primary, and the brief that the secondary was getting through the spark gap that was connected to the Avraminko fork. I used the expressional format in which I said that if you try to lift a 60 pounds and you do it rapidly for the short period of time, you can do it. But if you try to hold it, you're not going to hold it longer. So the flyback was getting a brief from the spark gap. The same story we're having with the transmitter that is delivering megawatts of power from the radar transmitter, and it goes through the spark gap. The receiver is not getting damaged, and the reading of the signal is in the intervals of the spark interval not present and to exist.
The 100 and some odd kilohertz that was used during much of this movie, that signal generator, that is a square wave or a sine wave generator?
That is a sine wave, pure sine wave, no harmonics. Of course, I can have a other signals that could be delivered to it. I just didn't get into that point how to have it happen.
That particular sine wave generator, is that the thing on the left-hand side that's got the two sets of display numbers on it?
Correct. And I modified it a little bit. The voltage is much higher right now, and that's the first stage. It's hard for me even to claim something. I'm just showing the effects of it. And eventually, I would be able to show more, but I gotta make myself convinced that I'm showing really something that is of value and to exist.
I think in past you've given us a data sheet on that signal generator. It has a model number.
Now, it is a TNC. I believe it's AG201 something. HB. We've been looking at it. That was a long time ago, and when I looked at some of the specs that was available, almost nothing is available for it right now. This thing is ancient. It was saying that the the recommended safe power for it is 30 watts, set for the 30 watts. And we have a power return of 26.
So once again, that's a model number TNC-AGV201. Is that what you said, Wes?
Something like that. I gotta go to that to look at it and find out exactly the model number. Hold on, maybe I would be able to find out that. Hold on.
I think you said you modified it. Roughly, what did you do to modify it?
Well, the first thing is that I didn't have enough of voltage. This thing goes only to 6 kilovolts at 20 milliseconds. So the typical output rise time is 6 kilovolts to 200 milliseconds. The output level is supposed to be 12 kilovolts. Right now it goes to 15 kilovolts. And the frequency response of this one is 100 kilohertz to 500 kilohertz, but the 12 kilovolts is peak to peak when the load is not connected, and that happens only if the control signal is a 200 hertz triangle at 50% modulation.
I2H.
Go ahead, Luke.
Only a few minutes left. Wesley, I just want you to know the video that link you gave me and the one that ultimately went up on this Dropbox is not the one you guys are looking at. The one that's up here is Spark Gap Tubes video. So I can't follow along. I don't know if that was a mistake or what, but just want you to know that.
So let's finish that, and we can talk about the Spark Gap. I believe Dick has enough of knowledge and experience with the SparkGap tubes, and the rest of the data that is right now not present, I can deliver for the next segment. What do you think about that video, Dick, that I have sent you with the SparkGaps?
Be too wild.
Go ahead, Bernie.
Lou, the video link that's in the Dropbox is the only one that Wesley published. He did not publish the one they're currently talking about.
I'm going to prepare the short version of the one that we're talking about is for publishing. I'm going to, right now I did publish only that one that is with the Spark Apps. So, did you have a chance, Dick, to look at the video with the Spark Apps completely, full length?
I might not have seen that one yet. Let me go back to Bernie for a minute. The word Dropbox. If I go to limog.org, will I find a place that says Dropbox? I've looked and I wasn't able to find it.
Negative. At this point, anybody that wants to get access to it, just drop me an email and I'll send you access to it.
Okay, so I think you're saying it's not on the Limog website. Is it on the Bernie, the Hunt family website?
Negative. You have to send me an email and I'll send you a link to it. There's no link to it posted anywhere.
Okay. I did do a look in both places. I wasn't able to find either one, and I was a bit confused, and I thought it was my incompetence.
Material is approved and for the audience, and I'm trying to be as much accurate as possible with the contents of it. It is some material that I don't want to go loud with it, and there are many reasons for them. One of the reasons is that I don't have a properly documented result. I don't want to look funny. I know that John and Dick and Glenn, these are the people who help me out to understand whatever I do not understand or I do not know. This is the part of the knowledge. Also, it's another thing is that we're dealing with very sensitive subjects. And to exchange.
And the question is this the forum for it? Is this an open forum or a private forum?
Well, don't try to attack me, please, because I'm going to get mad. There is none of the people participating in that TechNet who is obligated to give any links for any question that they have. Simply like that. So please don't put the pressure on me or any push on me, because I'm going to ask you for authorization. Who gave you the authorization to ask me to deliver anything at all? It's an open TechNet. Everybody is entitled to ask their question of its own, and he is not obligated to deliver any information at all. Sir.
I'm down, Wesley.
K2WOW.
I just sent you a link to the Dropbox. I sent it to your address at the league, the AWRL.net. K2YO clear.
Very good. I'll be getting that. Thank you.
Okay, so did you see that video with the spark guns?
I've got a write-up about spark gaps, which was translated, I think, from Russian to English. And there's another video about the spark gaps themselves?
That is correct, and that video was prepared today. And if you go to the send emails, that video is available to the public, anybody who wants to have the access for it, he will have the access for it. I'm trying to cooperate as much as possible, and that email was a Stargap Cubed video SWF approved for publishing, and it was sent at 6:49 today.
I'm looking for that right now. Stand by.
Okay, in the meantime, I'm going to explain what is it about. It shows probably 20 or more different types of the spark gap cubes that were used in the military. It's a good piece of American history, but it is not limited to American history. It is also comparing those tubes that were copied during the era of the Cold War by Russian. And showing not only the internal structure of them, but it shows how they are built. I have a few spark guts that I got damaged because of improperly applied heatsink or lack of the heatsink. So I'm showing the internal structure. Also, I include a schematics and the internal diagram, a drawing. There are barely available. You cannot almost find them, so it requires a lot of time to dig for it. And when you're digging for it, you probably not going to find it. Then explanation how the rudder and the receiver was connected, how that whole structure works, how the sink looks like, and then I show the different types of the spark gap tubes, including the one that is built into the waveguide. And that could be very much interesting to Dick as well, as he is dealing with the high frequencies.
KC2RFM.
Go ahead, Alan.
listening to the conversation, trying to build a mental image of what you're doing here.